I am Plata on the line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Jiv Parasram joins me now. He is the director of an upcoming production of Theatre Conspiracy's Victim Impact. It is the world premiere of the Tim Carlson work about the fallout of the Rashida Samji fraud scheme. Between 2003 and 2012, the former notary public drew in family, friends, and their communities into a vast web of deceit. This show, a live documentary investigating the mysterious aspects of the case, looks at how the fraud was perpetrated, as well as its fallout, not just the millions of dollars involved, but the over 200 people who were victims. The cast stars Jen Griffin, Nimet Kanji, Risha Nanda, Alan Morgan, and Munish Sharma. Jiv Parasram is a multidisciplinary artist, researcher, and facilitator. His work has played across Canada. He is artistic producer at Pandemic Theatre and the associate artistic producer at Theatre Passe Muriel. He grew up in Halifax and splits his time between Toronto and Vancouver. Visit conspiracy.ca for more information, as Victim Impact will evolve into a podcast, and tickets.theculch.com for tickets. The show runs the 8th through the 17th of June at the Historic Theatre at the Culch, 1895 Venable Street, Vancouver. Mr. Parasram was recently named the 2018 Emerging Artist by the Toronto Arts Foundation. Please welcome to the Plant Online program, Jiv Parasram. Mr. Parasram, good morning.
Morning.
Thanks for joining us.
Of course.
I guess congratulations is in order. You received an award recently, the Toronto Arts Foundation's Emerging Artist Award. Is that right?
That's correct, yeah. I was unfortunately not in town, but lucky for me, a friend of mine who's very enthusiastic got to give the acceptance speech. So I found that actually in rehearsal.
Yeah, so you split your time between there and here?
Yeah, I try to as much as I can. I mean, like, it tends to be that I'm in Toronto most of the time, but then, I'm in Vancouver as often as possible. So the aim is to be here a bit more, like, happier. Ideally, in the winter would be ideally to be here, but, you know.
Well, last winter was pretty rough, so I guess it's a jump ball when it comes to which is colder, right?
For sure. Well, even our spring was like, we had an ice storm right in the middle of it.
Yeah, that's true. We had this early summer now, so this is not terribly bad, is it?
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, what, I'm interested to know, is it just work that allows you to live both places, or?
Yeah, I mean, largely. My partner is based here. She's a theater artist herself, that's, I think, largely what has been pulling me over. But I've always had quite an interest in the kind of theater that people do out here. It's, I think, formally perhaps a bit more experimental than what we tend to have in Toronto. So that's a bit more my jam. So I try to be here for that as well.
So here's a dumb question, and it's not the first one I'll ask in this interview. But I've never been to Toronto, but I know about it, especially the theater scene, because I read the Globe and Mail, or I read online about it. I guess there's more theater there than there is here, right?
Well, maybe. I mean, it might be a per capita thing. There certainly seems to be like a larger amount of it happening. We've got, but not to say that there's not a lot of theater happening in Vancouver. It seems like there is.
Yeah, there is. Yeah.
But I would say that on your average year, you see a lot. Like I've done a couple of juries for our version of the Jessies, which is called The Doors Out There.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, this year was a little bit slower in terms of independent, but you're looking at usually at least, like, between 60 to 80 independent productions that happen per year, plus about five main stage theater seasons on a larger level, plus commercial and opera and all that stuff. So there's a lot going on all the time, I would say.
Yeah, so you mentioned a moment ago that this scene here is a little more experimental. I guess when it comes to, say, live documentary like Victim Impact, I guess Theatre Conspiracy is quite the innovator when it comes to shows like this. Isn't that right?
Absolutely. Like, I think that, you know, if you look at the way that they approach Foreign Radical, it's an amazing way to build the audience with agency and implicating them in the discussions of the issues that they were tackling there. So I think that what's very interesting about them is that they really question what it means to be doing political theater that draws so heavily on research. Because it can seem like, with a different company, I think you could do this stuff that would be very, like, reporting the facts. It's a thing you just come and see, and there's nothing beyond that. Like, it could basically be a bit more of a heightened emotional art.
Uh-huh.
Like Tim's research on this thing and speaking with the victims, I think, is really what the focus of this piece is. So we focus in on that and representing it, not necessarily in straight up realism, but shifting the form a little bit.
Yeah, and so was that something? Is that something that say you and Tim Carlson, who wrote the piece, are those in the discussions that you have prior to mounting a production like this? Is that rooted, say, in an interest in this case?
An interest in the case in terms of, like, moving forward into the production?
Was this something that you guys followed, perhaps?
Well, Tim had been following it for some time. Him and Kathleen, who's the dramaturg on this piece, have been quite heavily involved, as well as Gavin Chiba, who's assistant directing and was been working with them. So they've been quite involved with following and doing some pretty heavy journalistic research. They've got a podcast that is a little bit more into the traditional journalistic edge of it, which is coming out and leading up to the production as well, and
right.
There'll be some stuff after.
Yeah.
So I think in that way, that interest is what led to adapting it to a stage play. In terms of how I came in with that, it was largely in discussions about, like, the cultural relevance of it. And also, like, there's a lot of people do, like, political theater around the country, but there's not a whole lot of folks who it's their main focus. I mean, like, and that's what I do out in Toronto with my company, which travels, you know, so we're not just in Toronto.
Yeah.
So I've had a working relationship with Tim in terms of just chatting about stuff for years now. So it was a chance for us to kind of collaborate on something that seems to hit home in a lot of ways for both of us.
Yeah, this is a case that a lot of us in this town followed because it was in the news a lot.
Mm-hmm.
What's interesting as well is that the central figure is a woman.
Mm-hmm.
Some people might find it fascinating that she's a woman of color.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that interests me a lot is that it's a white collar crime because you know there's no bank heist, say there are no weapons, it's not sexy in that regard. But the other thing that I'm thinking about as I'm preparing to talk to you today is that because of the size, the scope of this thing, one doesn't realize just how prevalent it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I think that's kind of one of the most interesting things about the piece. Like, I know Tim was quite interested in unraveling just kind of the walls, so to speak, or the knit security of what we see with white collar crime, because it can be quite complex, and like the way that the Securities Commission has to deal with the information and like what can be on the record, what cannot be on the record. It's quite the wall. It's not what we see on like American TV shows, like that's not our legal system. I think there's quite an ignorance towards what our legal system actually is for most folks. I would say myself included to a large extent. I remember when I came here for our workshop, we were just at one of the court cases down at the court downtown here.
Yeah.
And like I've been to a court before, but like there's probably about five people in the courtroom besides just the judge and a couple of lawyers. And it is such a long, drawn-out process. Like, something that we see when we put that on stage is kind of the, you know, how absurd some of it can seem.
Yeah.
You know, the amount of, red tape's probably not the right word, but the amount of, like, process that's around it. So it makes sense to me that, like, because of all of that, these white-collar crimes, which, like you said, they're not the sexy bag heist, they're not going to be covered in the same way. They're harder to penetrate and understand what's really going on. And often people who are involved in them, they are very well-versed in how to hide themselves.
Yeah, so we would see news stories about the case during the trial. And as I look at your production and read up on it, there are a number of aspects to this case that we don't know. So I guess it makes it rife for a production like yours that to want to say uncover some of these things and a lot of these things that weren't made public. I guess you want to fill those gaps in their minds, right?
Yeah, for sure. And I think that one thing that is an important balance for us to hit in the production is, as you said, there is a lot that we don't know. Besides, like, you know, these things that haven't been heavily reported on, there are even holes in the entire story that we can only imagine. And so we're trying to, this is, I think, where the formal difference comes in from just more like court proceedings, that kind of thing. We have to look at different ways to communicate, like, that there are some imaginings of, like, well, what could this have meant, you know, and how could this have gone down? And we had to take liberties with that and show that it's, like, this is not, we don't know that this part is true. Here's how it could have happened. Here's what somebody described. So if we're going to go off their description, well, here's how we would see that going down. And that comes with a different lens to it.
Yeah, the scope of this fraud, I mean, it's almost unimaginable because we're talking millions and millions of dollars and over 200 people, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I think I heard you say a moment ago that you got to talk to some of these victims. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, I've had small interactions with them. Tim and Kathleen have done a lot of really long interviewing over a couple of years now. They've developed some relationships with the victims. I had the chance to meet a few folks who came to a reading that we did of the workshop version of it when we were still working on the script back in the early fall.
Yeah.
And so, I met them that way.
Yeah. What's their reaction been to say what's happened to them being used in a dramatic production like this?
Well, you know, it seems like they're pretty on board with it, the folks that I've met, at least.
Yeah.
And they're happy that the story is getting out there. As we start the play, like the first bit of text, it starts to paint a picture of the suspicions I think that many of them had towards Tim coming in.
Yeah.
From the get-go, now it seems like everybody's on board that he knows. But yeah, you know. And I get that suspicion, right? Like, people, they've been ripped off, and obviously a lot of people are trying to get their story, and a lot of people have different agendas, so Tim's coming in, I think, relatively, quite altruistically, when you look at it, he just wants to get to the bottom of this thing, and show it to the city, like, how many people in this community were affected, about things that, you know, often we don't talk about because there's stigma and shame attached to it, but things that we should.
Yeah. Do you find that not just the victims that you spoke with, but the victims in general, a lot of us have sympathy for them in terms of their losses, but a lot of people don't because, some people might think they were just greedy to get into this because they wanted to say, turn a profit, or just irresponsible in that they wanted such a return that was too good to be true.
Yeah. Well, you know, some of them have admitted towards that, like, you know, hindsight 2020, like, some folks have said, like, well, maybe it was greed, you know, for me. Or I personally have come across, like, since starting to work on it, a couple of people through kind of extended networks, family, friends and stuff, who were caught up in it as well. And it's been interesting to think about it in that context, because there are, of course, like, people who were putting in tons and tons of money into this. Maybe there, some of those were people who had the money to invest.
Yeah.
Most of them weren't people who really had the money to invest, but they maybe had enough that they could remortgage something, which puts them in a bad place now, for sure.
Yeah.
But then there's other folks, too, who put in smaller investments, something like, you know, $15,000, which to me is a lot of money, and to them is also a lot of money. But that $15,000, you know, that's gone now. And these are people who don't have much, and they don't. They're just trying to find a way to invest in it, to get something better, make a better life. So, on some regards, I suppose, yeah, I could see the greed argument. I could see the like you should know better argument. In hindsight, but I also understand, you know, I think that that's part of what we're trying to do with the piece too, is to say, like, this was an irrational decision made by so many people.
Yeah.
But that's also a very human thing to do. Like, mm-hmm. We can rationalize and say, like, well, you shouldn't have done that, but I told you so doesn't really help. And it doesn't help people from not getting into that situation, too.
Yeah, it makes us for such rich material to work with. Now, what sort of, is that how you pronounce your name, Nimet Kanji?
Yes.
So she portrays Samji.
Yeah.
The other thing that I was thinking about as I was preparing our chat, because we saw her on the news all the time walking to and from court, mm-hmm. we think we know her. But then but then she hasn't given any interviews. We really don't know much about her. So what sort of discussions are you having with Ms. Kanji about how to portray someone that we don't really know much about?
Well, it's still a bit of a challenge, you know. Like, we're not trying to say that, like, this is a completely authentic representation. We can go off the court documents.
Mm-hmm.
We can go off, there's, like, maybe one or two, like, actual recordings of her.
Yeah.
Since the evidence has come out. And then we can go off, like, extrapolating and, like, considering her public persona, because, you know, she was involved very much in philanthropy and big member of the Ismaili community, which the band is also part of. So, you know, there's cultural knowledge that comes along with that and an understanding. So, you know, I wouldn't say that we're trying to transform the Met into some type of show, but in a very real way, but there's a certain truth that Nimet has towards playing her, and I think that it's, she's Nimet's an excellent actor, so there's that, but then also an understanding of, I think, some of the unseen aspects that could go in question. So we continue to talk about it in a lot of rehearsal. Yeah. We talk about, like, what the context is for playing this figure in a broader cultural lens of, like, viewing who, you know, when we do theater, it's always, like, there is always the vulnerability of when you put the body of an actor of color on stage. I say that also as an artist of color, that people will often think that they speak on behalf of, like, the entire community,
right?
Which is a hard thing to fight against. So we're always considering what the impact is on both the actor and what the impact is in the assumed representation of that community, and what that message is that's going out and how we gather together to view this thing as a larger community that the city of Vancouver in this case.
Yeah, your work, not just this production, but your other work that you've done for the stage has always focused on, I shouldn't assume that, but I'll ask you. I mean, was it a concern of yours, or say a goal of yours to have work that would illuminate, say, other people to the rest of the community?
Right, right. I mean, yeah, I suppose in some ways. I mean, I've always been interested in, like, a critical lens, so to speak, and yeah. I think that that's probably just from lived experience. You know, I grew up in the Maritimes, so from Dartmouth, Nova Scotia, which is not the most diverse place. And, you know, there is quite a large African Nova Scotia population, but then as a South Asian, I'm not part of that either. So I've kind of had a marginal experience for a long time, and so that's probably fueled a lot of it. But I think that by giving what I would consider, like, say, often the label is given as marginal or I would say an alternative to the mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
By the inclusion of this, we start to broaden our scope of who we are, in a way, the stories that we have and how to deconstruct those identities. So it's a theme I keep returning to, for sure. So, it's a driving force, and also the practicals of, like, the places where I've found the most opportunity to thrive are people who share similar values of inclusion. And so that, I think that's coming through, with, say, working with companies like this and the work I do in Toronto and elsewhere in the country.
The reaction from audiences, though, I mean, have you seen them tell you that this is something that they're interested in, that say, a diversity of voices is important to them?
Yeah, absolutely. And then, you know, that becomes a bit of a challenge too, right? Because, I just recently did a piece in that we played in Toronto, and that one was, it was playing on the form of an identity play, and that structure is very much like you get the person on stage, in this case it was me,
uh-huh.
and the person on stage, and I kind of focus, and that everybody feels good. So we wanted to look at, like, well, what is the real political ramifications of doing that, of, like, essentially putting yourself on parade? So we took the opportunity of that to really deconstruct it and question why we do that. What is the purpose of making someone explain their identity for you rather than trying to seek another connection with the goal? So, you know, that while I do find that there is a desire for diversity, a desire for inclusion, it's not always that the agency is given to the artist to just be the artist. Instead, there's a barrier to get through first, of difference. It's kind of this old stand-up adage I think I've heard from a lot of female stand-ups, which is like, you got to establish difference. If you don't establish difference, you're not going to get past that first joke. So maybe there's a different way to think about establishing difference. Maybe it's acknowledging difference. Maybe it's just a quick paradigm shift to say, here's a thing, and here's now how we're going to engage in this conversation together. I'm not sure. I come back into it a lot.
Yeah. What I saw the trailer for that, the production you just alluded to. What was the name of it? It had to do with milk, right?
Oh, yeah, Take the Milk, yeah.
Yeah.
It's really where I'm just drinking milk.
I watched it with both envy and horror because I deal with lactose intolerance. So.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry for you.
But another dumb question. Okay. Because you were on stage for that, and now you are a director in this production, Victim Impact, one assumes that working on stage as an actor is a lot more, say, exhausting, both physically and mentally, than it is to be a director, is it?
In some ways. I mean, sometimes I think it might be more exhausting mentally to be a director because you're on the outside. You're just trying to keep everything together. Like, you know, we don't, of course, have all of our full elements of the stage in until physically we get into the space and start piecing it together. It's a lot of, like, holding and imagining, like, how is this all going to work, navigating the room in that way. But it's hard to say. Like, personally, I do act, I suppose. Like, I perform is how I talk about it, really, because I the things that actors do, like the level of training, the level of practice and rigor, I think is something that I couldn't compare myself to. I will do shows from time to time. Like, we're also simultaneously, while I'm here, my company, Pandemic, is going to be bringing our production called The Only Good Indian, which is going to be at the Revolver Festival. We just did Uno Fest. So they're coming here. I'm going to join them. And then we all will perform that at night while I'm directing this one in the day. So it's splitting the brain in a way that I think is healthy. But yeah, I think they're comparable, but acting requires a whole other level of intense focus. So in that way, I suppose it would be quite mentally exhausting as well.
Yeah.
Physically exhausting as an actor.
I'll bet. So I mean, I guess it is a necessity in this country, at least in the theater world here. Well, I would assume in other parts of the world too, to be as multidisciplinarian as you are.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, it's tough to just do like one specific thing in theater and expect to make a living. I mean, it's difficult to think that you're going to make a living just doing theater either, but it's possible, you know. It's if you live a humble life type thing. Right? Some people do quite well. But yeah, I think it's important. And I think that's actually one of the advantages we have in our sector is because people do have to wear so many hats, so to speak. You gain an understanding for what a lot of other folks are doing in the room. So like I've worked as an actor, I've worked as a director, I've worked as a technician, I've worked as a stage manager, writer, producer, like as many things as I can because for me it's very important to understand the labor everybody's putting in to make a thing happen. At the end of the day, we often just see the actors, and the director will often get, like, some quite put on more of a pedestal than they should be, the writer as well in this country. Well, actually, less than Vancouver. In Toronto, the writers put very high on the pedestal. And there's so many other people that make the thing actually work. And they don't always get the acknowledgement. So it's important for us, I think, as a sector to share that labor.
Yeah, and it must be terrific for you to have all of these, say, skills. I mean, you have to keep yourself nimble.
Yeah, so to speak. I mean, like, it's great for me. I've never really wanted to have to, maybe it's just how I was raised. My mom always raised me to never really trust anybody. which not the way I turned out, but she did always, you know, instill this belief system that, like, no one's necessarily gonna help you. You shouldn't have to rely on people too much. And that's an important part of it. Like, what I do have from it is I know I can, if I need to put a show up, if I have something I want to say, yeah. I've got all the various skills that I can more or less do it. It's going to be a lot of work if I don't have anybody else with me, but at least I can do the things that are necessary. Except for lighting design, I don't know enough about that. I need to really learn that better.
Well, there's another career, right? But hashtag life goals or whatever. The podcast, I guess people can go to the website conspiracy.ca for more information on that.
That's right. It's on iTunes as well, iTunes and Stitcher.
I see. Yeah. And so is that something that I guess all of you have been involved with, is that right?
Well, it's been more Tim, Kathleen, Gavin, and also David, our sound designer on the show, sound designer and composer. They've been kind of leading the charge on that one. It's like a slightly separate project, but obviously there's a lot of overlap.
Yeah.
Listening to it has actually been really helpful for me, to just like learn more about it, even just like hear some recordings of the victims. And I think it's like a really good primer for walking into this thing specifically. Like this case has been going on for so long. It's good to get like an update, and they've done a really good job of investigating it. Also, it's just really well put together, which is all of that.
It's been such a pleasure to talk to you today. Congratulations on the award and best wishes. I guess break a leg, as they say in your business.
Yeah. Thanks so much. Thank you for taking the time.
Visit tickets.theculch.com and conspiracy.ca for more. The show is called Victim Impact, the 8th through the 17th of June at the Historic Theater at the Culch, 1895 Venables here in Vancouver. Jeff Paris-Ram joined me on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.